The following presentation was recorded at the Newbury Buddhist Monastery, Victoria, Australia. Please visit our website at nbm.org.au.
So, this will be my third Dharma talk for this year. So as usual, when I do give a talk, I like to talk what's happening around the world and also with our practice and also in the monastery. Yes. Yeah. So it's been quite a quiet and peaceful time during the Vasa in the monastery. And it seems like due to lockdown, the monastery is even more quiet. So the monks have a lot of time to practice and also basically have a more of a distance from our lay supporters, because during our normal pre-COVID pandemic, you see we get a lot of Dana people coming to offer our only meal for the day. And sometimes we have up to about 20 to 200 people coming. But due to the lockdown and the restriction, that's been cut down right down to the minimum. So sometimes we don't really have anyone coming. So in a way, it's good for the monastic here, especially for the monks, because we can really have a really quiet time. So it's been a very peaceful and wonderful Vasa this year. Yes. But due to the restriction, time to time, we have to check online to see what's happening with the cases and the COVID situation. But also one thing that I do check is what's happening around the world. And I do notice with the world, with the issues of the world and the drama of the world, is never ending. It's just always seems like a never ending story of issues and drama. And recently we have a bit of protests in Melbourne, and I noticed that people are getting really impatient, and sometimes our emotion can be out of control. So I thought maybe that's a good topic to talk about in Buddhist sense of the world and the Eightfold Path. Yes, our emotion is quite important to practice, but also it's a great source of insight, because in Buddhism, we are practiced to watch our mind, our body, and especially our feelings and our mind object through our sense doors. So it's very important to understand what's happening with our emotions, because if we don't be mindful, understand what is happening with our emotion, we can really get caught up with things in the world through our five senses, and that can cause a lot of stress and unhappiness and depression. So as a Buddhist and also a human being, we try and develop the higher mind, and not to develop the mind that's our controller. Because a mind that's out of control is a great source of suffering to ourselves and to other people. But a well-controlled mind is a great source of happiness to ourselves and other people. Mm-hmm. Yes, so when I was reflecting all this type of emotion, sometimes I notice up in the news. Yeah, even myself, before I was a Buddhist, my emotion was completely out of control. I was a bit of a crazy person. I was working up in the mines, because I started my apprenticeship up in the mines, and I worked up in the mines for about 8 years. And so I was quite young at that time, in my early 20s. I started my apprenticeship, so I spent a lot of hours by myself working up in the mines. So the mines, that was about 25 years ago, so it's quite a long time ago. But now I'm about 45, so when I first started there, I was about in my 20s. So working in the mines it can be a quite a tough environment because you see you are working with a lot of men and you're away from your family for a long period of time. So it was quite a tough environment to be. So the ratio of men and women is really unbalanced. So that normally there's about 7 men to 1 female. So yeah, so sometimes when you have that many men working in the mines, it can be quite a aggressive environment because the men can be quite macho. Yes, but I think these days things have changed a lot. I'm in the mines, so it become quite a pleasant environment to work in. Because my dad's still working up in the mines, and he seems to be quite happy because when he stays in Perth for too long, and he's working up in Perth for one stage, then he can get a bit grumpy. So when he went back to the mines and work here, he tend to enjoy the place more often because the system there was. You go to work for 2 weeks, then you come back for 1 week. So it's quite a good system, fly in and fly out. Yes. So he's always happy to come back to visit the family. And for us, we're always happy to see him again. Yeah. But when I first started in the mines 25 years ago, we didn't have that system of fly in and fly out. So I used to spend roughly 6 months up in the mines. So it's quite a long period of time. So yeah, so I find that it was quite a difficult time for myself, being a young person working out in the mines. So so you have to be quite tough and macho in the environment working up there. Yeah, and sometimes you have to learn not to show any emotion or any weak emotion. So you have to be quite tough and sometimes be a bit aggressive. And as a young person, I find it was fine to be a bit macho. But after a few years, it actually got to me where my thoughts, my feelings was basically out of control. And some days I can't even rest properly because my mind was just spinning around from one thought and one emotion. Because I was trying to figure out what to do. And it actually led to a bit of depression. So I noticed, looking at news these days, seeing people are a bit upset, and been complaining a bit. So then I reflected back when I was younger, before I was Buddhist, I had the same problem, being stuck in one place for a long period of time and not being able to see my family and friends working up the mines. So I was getting very emotionally unstable. Going a bit crazy myself, yep, to the point where I hardly get any sleep, and it actually affected my health. So later on, I decided to maybe try and do something about it. Yep. So one time, I went to visit a Buddhist center, and it was a Visakh day, and it was quite good. It was quite a good experience because where I was working, there was a small Buddhist community. So you see there's older people. You see the older people go there. So being a young person going there for the first time, I have drove past there many times, but I never went and visit. So I decided to go and visit during the Vesak celebration. And there was quite a pleasant environment. I noticed people there was happy and quite friendly. And I got quite interested. So I went and asked if I can borrow a book. And the book was basically on good question and good answer. When I read the book on the Four Noble Truth and the reason why we suffer is because of our attachment. We are attached to things, and because we are attached to things so much that we can't let go. And when we can't let go, we suffer inside because the one thing was very strong. And things that happens that we don't like, and we try and push away. And if the more we don't want it, and we feel that we're trapped, then the more we suffer. So I felt like that when I was working on the mines, that I was trapped. Yes. So so when I started learning about all these emotions that are causing a lot of stress and happiness and anxiety, so I was determined to do something about it. So one thing I first learned was meditation, and also to develop loving kindness. because that was the main breakthrough for overcoming my unhappiness when I was working up in the mines. So I spent a lot of time just being kind to myself, being kind to other people, and just develop a kindness within myself. But the meditation did help a lot. Yeah. So I slowly learned to overcome my problems. Getting overwhelmed my heart. And yeah, and one of the talk that I listened to was by Achim Brown. So Achim Brown was one of the first Western monks that I came across. And his Dharma talks was very clear and very easy to understand. So so at the time at the Buddhist Center, there was other teacher, but usually they speak in Mandarin or other different dialects or in Thai. So it's a bit hard to understand. But with Ajahn Brahm's talk, it was very simple and very basic and quite down to earth. So it actually really resonated with my practice. And one of the talk that I listened to was about the cup. Yes. So the cup is, I've got a cup here. So the cup, how heavy this cup is? Is it about half a kilo? No, it's less than half a kilo. Maybe even less than half a kilo. So it's not heavy. The cup is quite light. But if we hold on to this, then we'll feel the weight. And the more we, if I hold on to this for another 10 minutes, then it will get heavier. And if I hold on this for 1 hour, then I will start to have a sore arm. And if I hold on to this the whole day, then my arm will be really sore. And it will start to feel pretty heavier than less than half a kilo. And if I do this every morning, I wake up, I hold the cup, and I don't let go, and I hold on to it, then it will become a bit of a burden. So same with our emotion of stress, anxiety, and pain. The more we hold on to it, the heavier it becomes, and becomes a burden. So when things become a burden, it leads to suffering. And same with the cup, we learn to let it go. We learn to put it down. Yeah. And we let it go, put it down, then it's not a burden. So same with life, with anxiety, stress, pain. Sometimes, time to time, when they do come, we have to learn to let it go, put it down. So same with the cup. So I'll have a drink. Yep, then I'll put it down straight away. So same with daily life. So when pain, anxiety, stress do arise, we learn to let it, put it down as soon as possible. And one way of learning to put it down is to basically practice meditation. Meditation is basically to distance ourselves from our problems. Basic meditation is like to clean and wash away the defilements of the mind, especially greed, hatred, delusion, or fear. Yep. So when we practice meditation, we clean our defilements and then wash away, we distance ourselves from this negative emotion. Yep. So what meditation does, it brings peace of mind, happiness, and also silence. And also when you have a silent mind, in mindfulness will be there and become strong. So we become mindful in every moment, the time we wake up, the time we sleep. Yep. Instead of holding on to the stress, to the worry, to any negative emotion. So it was quite beneficial when I first learned meditation up in the mines, because time slowly, day by day, through loving kindness and meditation, I saw that I slowly changed, become more calm, more happier, and my emotion wasn't out of control. Also practice loving kindness. So that basically develop wholesome qualities. Yep. When you practice loving kindness, basically develop compassion and kindness. So that's metta. So there's a lot of benefit, meditation. So when we distance ourselves from our problem, calm our mind down, scientists have found that there's a lot of benefit. It reduces negative emotions, reduce stress, reduce depression, reduce anxiety, reduce pain, especially in the body. Then it also bring balance back to our emotion, increase focus. Then it builds managerial skills, or you can manage the stress. So that's one thing I noticed, because when I started doing a lot of meditation up in mind, I actually become quite productive, because it actually increased awareness and focus. Yes, also increase memory, and also lower high blood pressure. Because when we are stressed out or too anxiety, our heart will beat more, then that will increase our high blood, our pressure. So yeah, that's one way of lowering high blood pressure through meditation. Because if we don't take care of our emotion, our emotion can harm our body. When there's too much anger, it will weaken our liver. And if there's too much grief, then it will weaken our lungs. If we worry too much, then we weaken our stomach. And if we are stressed out too much, then that will weaken our heart and our mind and our brain. And if we have too much fear, then that will affect and weaken our kidney. But if we develop things like love, loving kindness, it'll bring peace and harmony to our body and mind. And if we laugh a lot, that will reduce our stress. And we smile a lot, then that will spread our happiness. Yeah. So loving kindness is very important to practice. Yeah, so once I started practicing loving kindness and did a lot of meditation, I found that my life changed, become more happier, more peaceful. I can sleep a lot better. And I start to have nice dreams. Yeah, but some people say it's harder, especially in a lockdown restriction. People have to work, they have to learn it. Earn a living. Yep, that's true. Sometimes we do have all this burden, but the good thing is, I was looking at a BBC report on some people that stay in Japan, and they were staying in a very small, tiny apartment or tiny house, and it was so small, it's like almost the size of a bedroom, even smaller than a bedroom. Yep. It's just have a simple kitchen, shower, and upstairs was the bedroom. And the price was a lot cheaper to rent. And yeah, and people have more time. Same for monastic. We don't really do too much work. Only the work that we do is to maintain the monastery and practice. And a bit of teaching. But our kutis are very simple. It's like a simple hut in the forest. I mean, the kutis here, because we have a cold environment and it's quite windy and it rains a lot and it snows sometimes. So, and to build according to council regulation. So most of our kutis here, we have our own attached toilet and shower, bathrooms. So it's a bit of a creature of comfort, and pretty deluxe. So when I first started my monastic practice, I stayed in Bodhiyana Monastery, and those kutis is very simple. It's almost like a garden shed in the forest. But due to bushfires, they have improved quite a bit now, because in the beginning, the house was made out of wood, And that wasn't suitable, staying in the forest with climate change and with the risk of bushfires. So now the as the monastery got more donation, they start building brick kutis. But if you ever seen a kuti in a Bodhidharma monastery, you know, just they are very simple. They're almost like 4 meters by 4 meters. So it's like a little tiny room, maybe the size of a bathroom. Maybe slightly bigger than a bathroom. So they're very simple. So yeah, so I noticed a trend with some lay people, young lay people. They decide to move into tiny homes or tiny apartments. When you have less stuff, then you have less burdens and less things to worry about. So I saw a documentary on a program where they fought the minimalist movement in America, where people are just decide to just get rid of as much stuff as possible at home. But they realize all this stuff at home, they're just collecting and collecting, and it's not really making them happy. It's become more of a burden and responsibility. So same with monastic, we don't have much. We only have our robe to keep us warm, a simple kuti as a shelter to practice, food and medicine to maintain this body. And that's all we require, these four requisites. Yeah. And for monastic, because we are not married, we celibate, so we don't have the extra stress to take care of families or kids. Yeah. So even though East has been checking a lot of young people are choose not to get married and happy to be single. Because when you have a family, it's a bit of a burden. Yeah. But some people are happy to have families. It's fine. But the responsibility is just have to work harder. Because I noticed when I was working on the mines, some of my friends, they will be complain that they're lonely, they don't have a partner, they're single, and they're so depressed and unhappy. So they complain to me when they are single and lonely. And later on when they got married, then they complain to me they don't have time. And it's a bit of a burden. They have to work hard. They're not so free, and they have to provide for the family and start buying a house and pay mortgage and child support and things like that. Being a monastic, the great thing is we are free from all this burden. We don't have to really have to have a mortgage to pay off. We don't work. So if we don't work, most monastic, we consider beggars because we don't have an income. We're not allowed to keep money. And basically we rely on charity of our generous lay supporter. So as long as we're practicing, we do a little bit of teaching today. And and we're practicing well, then our supporters come in and feed us. And if we're not keeping the precept and we're not practicing properly, then the supporters, they have the rights to basically not to come and support the monks, especially if we don't keep the precept and become a bit dodgy. Because sometimes we get time to time we get people bring up our supporters ring up the monastery, especially in Perth, and ask the senior monks what to do with monks and nuns. They're not behaving properly. And you see the senior monks say, if any monk or nun is not behaving properly, you don't have to support him. He can choose to support other good monks and nuns that are practicing well. So yeah, so our precept is very important. We're keeping our precept and we're practicing well, then the support will come. Yeah, so when we have less stuff, we have less problem. And if we don't carry our mental burden around, then we have less anxiety and worry. Sometimes reflecting on how things are happening in the world. Yeah, it is a bit sad, like, because people put so much effort, like, into just getting a job, a career, a family, basically earning a lot, earning a really good living, yeah, so they can get a big house, cars, holidays, everything. So when things are taken away, yeah, and things are not doing well in the economy, yeah, then it can lead to a lot of suffering, yeah. So yeah, so as a monastic, yeah, we don't have all this burden, except for just raising funds for monastery. That can be a burden too. And when you first start a new place, so I remember the time when I first came to Newbury Buddhist Monastery. I came here to support my friend that just started this place, and he was overworked and overwhelmed with a lot of work and responsibility. Yeah. So after that, he got really overworked and a bit burned out. So basically, he just took a holiday and just left the monastery. And he gave the monastery to me to just to manage it with the nuns. So that was a bit of worry, stress, anxiety for my practice. So yeah, it did got to me a bit. And I was working so much trying to maintain this place and get things done in the monastery. Yeah, because we were struggling in the early days, the first 2 days, first 2 years. Yep. So yeah, so I just got overwhelmed with work, responsibility, and problems. And yeah, the monastery was, we did have a bit of a debt, massive debt problem. And we didn't have a lot of people coming in to support us at that time in the early days. But it was good. I just be patient, take care of my own practice, especially my own practice among hardler. And I always remember Ashram told me, yeah, sometimes time to time go back to the main monastery and have a break. So when I went back to the main monastery, and some of the monks noticed I was a bit grumpy and complaining a bit. So after 2 weeks, they saw the change. I stopped complaining too much and I become more happier. So within 2 weeks, I basically unburdened myself. Yeah, so sometimes it's very important to time to time to have a break and have a rest, take care of one's mind, one's health, and allow the meditation to regenerate the mind and body. When the peace and happiness is there, then yeah, things will come back. Yeah, but now Newbury Monastery has gone the opposite. We managed to pay off most of our debts and completed the first stage of the monks new area, completed in 2020. And wow, so what a change when we pay off our debt and set up a place for the monks, especially for the monks, and so the nuns have their own place. And hopefully next month we will start to have the groundbreaking, and start building the lay center or the retreat center for the lay people. So once that's completed, we should have a proper fourfold community of monks, nuns, and our lay male and female practitioner. Once we have our own proper place, then that'll be a great place and a great benefit to all. Yeah, so it's quite interesting, yeah, because before I came here, I went to visit one of my friends in another monastery or temple, it's the Cambodian Buddhist Society of Western Australia. So I visit my friend there. He's usually by myself, and I go there. You see the Bodhidharma monks, we rotate the monks around. And I give him support because sometimes for all monastic, we like to be with one another and also support one another, especially if there's a monk staying by himself. That's why myself, when I come here, I always come over with a group of monastic just to support one another. So when I was staying at the Buddhist Society of Cambodia in Western Australia. I was invited by one of the supporters, myself and the head monk that was staying there, to do a Buddhist art gallery. So I said, okay, so that'd be interesting, yeah? Because for monks, we don't really go out much. Yeah? But in Western Australia, there wasn't a lockdown, so we had free to travel around. So we went to the art gallery, yeah? And I was thinking, this would be interesting, yeah? So maybe I'll be looking at some Buddhist painting and stuff. But when I went have a look, I was going, oh, okay, this is a bit extreme. So during the lockdown, last year, there was a Taiwanese artist that's a Buddhist, and he got a lot of spare time. So he was basically did a lot of painting on Buddhist theme. And one thing, a lot of the painting he did was on the different plane of existence, mainly in the hell plane. So when I was looking at the drawing, it was like, oh, you see people getting burned alive, boiled alive, eaten by the hell dogs, and chopped and ripped apart. I was going, this is interesting. Okay, in Buddhism, we do have this concept, but in the West, normally we don't really talk about it too much. It is there. Because sometimes we talk about things like that, can really put people off. Because people are stressed enough and worried enough, and you don't really have to be exposed to this kind of Buddhist concept. But these things are true, and they are mind-made. And our mind do create these things, our things. In our next rebirth, if we're not careful, we don't take care of our mind. But these things, we don't really talk about it too much. Because especially in the West, we talk about things like that, you can really put people off of Buddhism. But things like this, they do exist, but we don't really talk too much about it. So when I was looking at the art gallery, one of the hosts that was there, that's a lady, so she was doing a bit of study on those concepts, and she was showing us around with my friend. And she was saying that she was a bit worried and getting a bit of anxiety of reading all these things and thinking about it. So as a Buddhist monastic, you see, we try to help our supporters and practitioners. So I told her that you don't have to worry about all these planes. Because the main thing for Buddhists is you keep the five moral precepts, then that will guarantee you don't. When we pass away from this life, we don't go down to the lower birth. That's one thing is, if we keep the five precept, then that basically will avoid us behaving badly by body, switch, and mind. So these five Buddhist moral precepts, for those that don't know, is refraining from taking life, not killing all living beings. Because when you kill, when you harm beings, it creates a lot of negative and bad karma, especially in the mind, because we see things and it becomes ingrained in our mind. Yeah. So, and then we refrain from not taking what is not given, so not stealing anyone's property. And we refrain from any sexual misconduct, so we should basically, as a Buddhist practitioner or lay Buddhist, basically just have one partner and don't go around having too many partners, because that can lead to a lot of breakup and pain and suffering to other people. Then we refrain from wrong speech. So basically not lying, harsh speech, or making things up, telling too many stories that are not true. Then we refrain from taking drugs or alcohol. I think with alcohol, that's a gray area. I think for a monastic, all kind of alcohol and drugs we avoid. But for lay practitioner, they see best not to take any drugs, especially drugs. Alcohol, I don't know, because for some people, they have a lot of excuses. They say you have to, for work, or when you go and visit friends or family. Yeah? Because sometimes when you have a little bit, it lead to more. So we try and refrain from that. And also I told the lady that was in the art career, practice loving kindness and compassion. Basic metta, practice metta. So when you develop wholesome qualities and keep precept, then that won't lead to the lower planes. Because when we start animals, then we become like animals. Then we can get reborn in those places. And we are very cruel. We inflict a lot of harm and suffering to a lot of people, especially in war zone and stuff. Then basically the rebirth is not so good. Yep. Yeah, so loving kindness is very important to develop. Yeah, so as a monastic, when we stay in the monastery, especially during the Vasala, yeah, we are free from all these worldly things and attachment. We have little stuff, we live a simple life in the monastery, and we have a little kutia that we stay in. It's quite funny because I think a few days ago when I was in my kutia, I was like on my bed and the whole bed started moving and shaking. I go, wow, this is interesting. It's an earthquake. Cool. But so when I was staying up in Christmas Island, working up in the mines there, yeah, time to time, there is some earthquake. So the whole place shake when there's an earthquake. Yeah, that was quite a long time ago. So yeah, this is a while since I experienced an earthquake where everything starts shaking. It only lasted for 10 minutes. Not, I mean, 10 minutes, 10 seconds. It's quite short. But it's quite interesting because in the sutta, the Buddha say, when a monk become fully enlightened, the whole earth will shake. Yeah, just in the whole, let's say, when someone become fully enlightened, it's a very powerful experience, and it leads to a lot of benefit to a lot of human beings. So for humans and also for devas, because it's so powerful that the earth will shake. And also when a fully enlightened person, say Arahat or Buddha, pass away, then also the earth will shake too. So once a person become fully enlightened, and when a fully enlightened being pass away from parinirvana, the ground will start shaking. Yeah, so it's interesting. Maybe someone become enlightened, that's why the place is shaking. Who knows? Anything is possible. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been a monastic for 12 years now. It's been a good experience. So I do see these defilements, emotion, become less and less. Sometimes it does come back, but it's not there for too long. Because when you are constantly practicing, you're mindful of your emotion and feelings, all these unwholesome emotions will slowly become less and less. And also the benefit of staying in the monastery is everyone is practicing. And yeah, and also you be around senior monks, like Ajahn Brown and Ajahn Nisarno. And Ajahn Brown has been a monk for 40 plus years. And Ajahn Nisarno has been a monk for more than 20 years. So it's quite inspiring to be around senior monks and also other senior monks in Bodhayana Monastery that's been enrolled for 20 plus years. Sometimes we have visiting monks that's been well practiced and been enrolled for many, many years. And you realize how, just an example, how calm, how peaceful, and how wise they are. And just being around with them, just the presence of being around them, you realize they have practiced well, and they have let go a lot of worldly attachment, and are quite peaceful, and not moved by fame, blame, basically the eight worldly winds, not moved by them much. So meditation is basically just freeing ourselves from our worldly desires and freeing ourselves as less as possible from greed, hatred, delusion, fear, and purifying the mind and avoiding evil and cultivating goodness. And this is saying, and this is the teaching of all Buddhists. Mind. Now, anyway, it's almost time to finish the talk. You see, I always tell a story. What story I tell? Okay, I tell my favorite story. Yeah. So this story is about a monk and a baby girl. So quite a long time ago, the story starts. It's a an old monk is staying up in the hills on the mountain, somewhere in Asia, and let's just mind his business and just practicing. And close to the monastery, down the hill, there's a village. And there's a village where these people, lay people stay. And this, and in that village, there was a young girl. And the young girl was have a friend, a boyfriend. And they starting to have an affair before they got married. And somehow the young girl got pregnant. And she got pregnant and she got really, really, really worried. And the boyfriend also got really worried, so the boyfriend ran away, and the young girl got so worried that the parents would get really angry and punish her. So as a pregnancy as her tummy become bigger and bigger, so she find that she can't hide it anymore. And she found she don't want the boyfriend to get in trouble, but the boyfriend also ran away. Yeah, so the young girl would say, okay, what can I do? Okay, I mean, I know what I do. I'll blame that old monk up in the hills. So one time, the young girl told the parents that she's pregnant, and the parents got really angry, and the village people got really angry. Who's the father? And she said, is that old monk that's living up in the hills? Then the village people got really angry. So they all got together with the young girl and walked up to the hills to confront the old monk. So when I see the old monk, he asked him, "You old monk, you dirty old monk, look at what you've done to my daughters. You should be ashamed of yourself. What kind of person you are?" So they all rung and scolded and shouted at the old monk. And the old monk was just saying, just the way things are. Yeah. So after that, all the village people went away and went down back to the village. And the old monk said, "Oh, a bit of drama, but also that's how things are." They carry on. So as the young girl, as her tummy got bigger and bigger, then she gave birth to the child. So, and the parents say, okay, the old monk must be punished for that. So they all went up together in a group with the girl and the baby, and they scolded the monk again. You dirty old monk, you bad monk, what have you done? You made this happen. So it's your responsibility here to take care of the baby girl. So basically, they dumped the baby child to the old monk to take care of. And the old monk say, also, so that's life. Nothing much he can do. So the old monk take care of the child. And because being an old monk, simple monk, haven't been married before, been celibate his whole life, don't know much about taking a child, so he tried his best. So he went out into the forest and managed to trap a goat and took a female goat back so he can milk the milk and to feed the baby girl. So so the old monk took care of the baby girl for quite a long time, for about maybe into the child got older and older, and so as the child got older and older, then the old monk will teach the child how to meditate, how to behave, how to be a good human being, and how to basically take care of herself and take care of the monastery. So it's been more than 10 years, maybe 15 years, 16 years later, and the little girl grew up to be quite a beautiful, well-behaved, polite, and hardworking person. So, that young lady, or young girl, was out one time collecting mushrooms in the forest. And for some reason, maybe it's to do with karma, she bumped into her mom again. But at that time, they didn't know one another. So she was collecting mushrooms in the forest. Then she heard a lady just yelling in pain. And she went over there and she found this older lady in pain in the forest. Like basically she tripped and hurt herself while collecting firewood to bring back to home. She went there and asked, "Ah, oh, auntie, how are you?" Because in Asian country, you see you call an older person that's older than you, auntie or uncle. So we go, "Auntie, what's wrong? Are you okay?" And the older lady is saying that, "Oh, I just tripped and hurt my leg." And the young lady say, "Oh, it's okay. I'll carry you back to your village." And the older lady say, "Oh, that's very kind of you. But how about my firewood? Because I need to bring that down so you can cook tonight." Yeah. And the younger lady said, "No, it's okay, no worries. I'll carry you back to your village, then I'll come back and bring the firewood." So she basically took her up in the back and carried the older lady back to the village. And when she dropped her off, she said, "Okay, she'll go back and collect the firewood and bring it back to her." So she went back up to the hills, collect the firewood and bring it back down to her house. Yep. And the lady was so grateful, and she asked the young girl to say, "Oh, you should stay and meet my family and basically have a drink, have a tea before you go back." And she says, "No, I need to go back soon." The younger lady said, "I need to go and finish collecting my mushroom and bring back to my master." And the older lady was quite curious. He said, "Who's your master?" And they say, "Oh, my master is that older monk that's staying up in the hills, up in the little hermitage or little monastery." And after that, she left. And the older lady was going, "Wow, she's staying up in the hills." She's wondering, she must be my daughter. Because when she was young, her whole family went up there and dumped the little baby girl off to the old monk to look after and blame him for all the problems. So she's saying that young lady is so polite and so mannered, quite pretty too. So she was thinking and thinking and thinking, because after the child, she never remarried. And she was basically single with her parents. So she was thinking, "Wow, what can she do?" Like, she always wanted a child, and now there's a really polite person living up in the hills. So she decided to confess to the parents. So she told the parents and told the village people what happened. And the village people and the parents got so upset and sad and angry towards herself, what had happened, that they blamed the old monk for what happened to her daughter. So they all got together and they all marched up the hill and they saw the old monk and they all backed down and they all begged forgiveness, cry and say that they're really bad. They have blamed the old monk for what happened to the daughter. And they asked for forgiveness and everything. And they asked if they can take back their young daughter back to the village. And the old monk said, "Oh, also, okay." So, yeah. So after that, the older monk saying, "Oh, what can you do? Because they are your parents, and they're asking you to go back. Yeah? And they're not blaming the older monk for the problem, the beginning again. And well, the older monk say, end of the day, he's asked, is it up to the young lady to decide, yeah, for herself, if she wants to go back, yeah, or stay in the monastery. Yeah? Yeah. And that's the end of the story. So sometimes in life, things are always changing and also unexpectedly. So sometimes we are blamed for things that we have not done properly, or we didn't did, or we are praised for things that we've not even done. It's not our fault. So life is very uncertain. So when praise and blame comes, problem comes, sometimes it's always good to accept things with a heart of equanimity. So that's a short story. Hopefully it's not too short. Okay, so we'll finish for the Dharma Talks, and you see, and we finish, I always invite any of our audience if they have any questions.
Thank you very much, Bhante, for the talk and the story. We have three questions online at the moment. So I'll read out the first one for you. It's a bit of a personal question in a way, Bhante. Bhante, if you were to leave the monastic life now, would you have enough Dharma in your heart to maintain the practice and still achieve liberation?
Okay. To be honest, when I was practicing as a monastic, when I was still quite a junior monk at that time, I did talk about it myself. Maybe I can practice and for maybe a few years, 2 to 3 years, and go back to lay life and continue to practice. But I realized when I visit my family during the holidays, especially in December, you see when my parents, my dad come back from the mines, and my brothers and sisters take the Christmas and the long weekend holidays, I go and visit them. Then I realize when I'm at home, there's a lot of distraction, and I find that my meditation will slowly go down, lose traction, because I can get caught up with a bit of worldly life, just being around with my family, because my mind will start to scatter, and I'll start to almost think like a lay person, and have worldly desires arise in my heart. But when I go back home, because I know I was only at home for maybe 2 weeks or a little bit longer than 2 weeks. But when I went back home, then I find all this anxiety, or also like anxiety of missing my family. When it will disappear after like a few days, then my meditation will pick up again. Then I realize that, this is attachment. And this attachment is very strong. And it will pull me back to lay life. If I stay at home too long, or associate with lay people too much. But if I stay in the monastery, then I realize the eightfold path and the Dharma practice will arise in my heart strongly again. So I realize it's quite difficult. You can practice as a lay person at home, but you basically have to live like a monastic, stay by yourself, constantly take care of your mind and practice, because I have met lay people that are in their 50s and 60s and 70s. They have very good meditation. Sometimes meditation is even better than monks, but they have been practicing for like all their life, and sometimes they're staying by themselves, and the kids are all move out, and sometimes their partner pass away. So basically they're basically by themselves and living a life as a monastic. As for myself, going back to lay life, that is very unlikely, because I find that if I'm in the monastery, I'm more peaceful and more happy. And it's just more, quite relaxed and quite peaceful. And if I'm back at a lay life, I find it becomes a burden again, just working, and just looking for a job. And after a while, the mind becomes so scattered, and it will slowly affect my health too. And I mean, I've been a monk for like about four, over 12 years. Yeah, I'm just more happier as a monastic. And I see lay life for myself. It does not lead anywhere. It's just more of a burden. It's basically working and enjoying yourself. I try doing that when as a lay person, coming to the monastery, staying for like a month or longer, and going back to practice as a lay person, for 10, 11 years. And I find it very hard to get traction. So at that time, I was still quite young. Only ordained when I was 23. Not 23, 33. So later on. So who knows? I don't know. I think, unless the whole monastery fall apart, and the monastics start to argue and fight one another, and the monastery gets sold off, and there's no monastery to stay here. But if that happened, I'll probably just become a hermit and stay by myself in a small hermitage. So, this roving is a chance for me is very, very unlikely. Even if the whole monastery or partner and all the monks start to behave really badly, maybe I might just go back to lay life shortly and scout around to look for a monastery to go and ordain overseas. But I think most likely I'll be just become a hermit and I'll be run my own simple hermitage somewhere else, far away. Mm-hmm. That's a monastic. Okay, anyway. It's a speculation. Okay, thank you.
We trust that never ever happens.
I don't know.
The next question, Bhante, is how to deal with anger and helplessness when I'm affected by events I cannot do anything about?
Yeah, it's quite difficult. Yeah. When that happened, sometimes it's good to have a break. Yeah. When I was here, the first 2 years, supporting this place. Second year, I was supporting this place. My friend left, overwhelmed with work, and he left the monastery and he gave this place somewhere to manage. And it was quite difficult the first 2 years. We had to deal with work, deal with problems with the committee, problems from the monastic, and sometimes have to deal with guests that are staying in the monastery. And some of them come in with emotional problems, they can become very aggressive. Sometimes if some misunderstanding with other guests and other monastic, then they can start to, because I was the guest monk at the time, so they can come and start arguing with me. One case, I just calmly listened to that guest, and he was shouting at me for like almost 20 minutes. After that, I go, wow, this guy was just really lost the plot. But I'm used to it before, because of my training as a monastic. So I just accepted the shouting and the screaming and the yelling and the putting down, because he was so aggressive. I just say, okay, no worries. He just need to get it off his chest. So he got it off his chest, and I left him alone. And later on, he came and apologized. And he told me that because he just 3 years with his farmers, because he came from a very abusive family. His dad was very abusive towards him, plus his family. So he was conditioned that way to react. It was just a way for him to cope. To cope. First of all, human being, it's either fight or flight. So he chose to fight. So I go, okay, no worries. The whole problem came about was he was using a chainsaw, and I told another monk to tell the guest to wear safety equipment and don't use the chainsaw without wearing safety equipment, because if you have an accident, then the monastery is liable. But I think that monk went and told him too many things, saying that I was like, I don't trust him, trust his word and stuff. And he got really offended. And he came and shouted at me for 20 minutes, nonstop. It triggers his emotion. And I apologized. I said, look, end of the day, I'm in charge of the guests. I'm in charge of work, and the main most important thing is safety. You must work with someone. You must wear safety equipment, and if there's an accident, the monastery is not liable, because if you hurt yourself first, the monastery is liable, and your family might sue us too. So the intention was specific for his own safety. Yeah. So that's why I told him not to do things like that. Yeah, but it took it the wrong way. Yeah. So that's monastic life. You try your best and you still get blamed for me. So that question is quite common. I get asked that quite a lot. Sometimes when dealing with difficult people, you have to set a boundary with difficult people, and you must have a lot of patience and understanding and learn not to react. Because if two people react, then things get worse. And you see, like, this is just cause and conditions. When there's a cause, there's always a condition. And you accept it for what they are. Yeah. So that way, because in Buddhism, there's a concept of non-self. The more we buy into this reaction, then it will trigger our emotion. And when it triggers emotions, the other person is reacting, and you start to react. So react with calmness to see if you get shouted at, it's just noise. Noise is coming in, let the noise come in and let it go out. And we don't hold on to the problem. Because when I was teaching a meditation with my friend, with Pante Bodhidharma in Jhana Grove, there's about 50 people there. And that's the question that came out dealing with difficult people or things that is out of control. And I say sometimes it's just kindness towards ourselves and other people. Be patient. And after the meditation finished, I think it's a couple of us got together and discussed about things. And I found half the people in the retreat came from dysfunctional family. I was going, wow. So it's higher than what I expected. I thought maybe it might be 10%, 20%, but half the people in the monastery, half the people in the retreat that come from dysfunctional families. Maybe some of the monastic have come from dysfunctional family too. I mean, myself, I was a basic case, I was a lay person. Buddhist meditation helped me to overcome it. If not, I'll be a suicidal, depressed regular, working out the minds. Okay, anyway, I hope that answer some of your questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Next question is, how do you bring yourself back to a calm mind when your thoughts run away from you while meditating?
Okay. It is very difficult. So when meditation is calming our thoughts and our feelings and also our memories and to ground our awareness within this mind and body. So when our thoughts scatter all over the place, we have a lot of different emotions and feelings. It can be depression, anger, anxiety, and worry, or just a restless mind. Sometimes it's good to go for a walk. Go for a walk in the park. If the restriction is, if you can go for a walk, you can, if due to a restriction, COVID, you can't go for a walk. Just walk around the garden in the monastery. Sometimes the lay guests of the monastic here will go for a walk around the monastery or up into the forest. Because the forest does have a quite a calming environment for one's heart and mind. Because I was talking to one of my monastic friend, and he was quite unwell in the monastery. So he went and stayed with his friend, a lay friend, close to the beach. And he will go for a daily walk around the beach and in the ocean. And that have a very calming effect on his heart and his mind. So in the monastery or at home, sometimes when your mind is racing around the place or quite chaotic, sitting down meditating, it's going to make it worse because our mind is not relaxed. The conditions are not there. especially if you're busy a lot and you haven't developed deep meditation yet. Yep. So sometimes it's good to go for a walk, just go relax a bit. Then when you come back and do the meditation, but you find that even if you do meditation and your mind's not settled yet, then do walking meditation. Walking meditation is basically walking back and forward in one location and just being aware of the sensation of your feet touching the floor, rising and passing away from your right and left feet as you walk. Walking meditation is being aware of the sensation, because sometimes those energies, anxiety or worry or anger becomes quite grounded in your body, so it has to go, allow it to wear away or disappear or flow away. So meditation is good. So once your body becomes calm, peaceful, then you go back to meditation. So what meditation does, it calms the mind and it distance ourselves from the problem. Then it brings awareness back to our breath and our body. The more we're aware of our breath and our body, then things become calm, more calm and more settled. So basic meditation, let things go. So when we let things go, then peace and happiness will arise naturally. Okay.
Thank you, Bhante. We have one last question. I will try to explain this. It's a little bit complicated. So the person is asking for suggestions how to navigate the middle ground between an intellectual understanding of the illusion of self, mm-hmm. and also having some moments of selfless experience, but also falling back into self-centeredness. So how do we navigate between the idea of non-self, but also finding that sometimes we are being very self-centered?
Oh, okay. These are quite typical. For monastic, they're staying here. Let's lower down the volume so we don't have an echo. For monastic, they're staying in Bodhiyana, also here. They have a very intellectual mind. They find that sometimes to calm the mind down to stillness is difficult. So sometimes it's good to just practice awareness. Awareness is just watching our thoughts, watching our feelings, watching our memories. As these thoughts and memories and feelings comes and go, it's always arising and passing away. The more you watch it, the more we see it is just a process that's playing out. As long as we distance ourselves from our thoughts, not by thinking, just by awareness, watching all these things that's happening in your mind and our body, then the more we watch it, the more we understand it, through insight of seeing cause and condition. So when we watch the arising and passing away of all these thoughts and feelings and memories, and you see the process arising, things that we do that will lead to suffering to ourselves and other people, then we see it's just a process, just karma playing out. So when we watch and understand all these things playing out, then we wisdom will rise. When wisdom arises, we see things clearly through insight. Because for a person who has a lot of intellectual mind, sometimes thinking too much is not a solve our problem. Sometimes we have to learn to sit back and be as a observer, that's like watching the clouds passing by, and like watching the kangaroos, the wombats, the eagles and stuff. When you watch stuff in nature, you learn a lot. So same thing with our thoughts and emotion. We learn to sit back and just watching with a calm mind. Then the more we watch, the more we understand. Okay, I hope that is that's useful.
Thank you very much, Bhante. That was the last question. So that's the end of this morning's talk. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for coming and joining the Dhamma talk. And I hope it's a good talk. Anyways, if it's a bad talk, then anyway, I'll just accept it. This is course and condition. Also, anyway, if I say anything wrong, my body, speech, or mind, mainly my speech, since it's a Dhamma talk, I'm not a really intellectual person. Usually my practice is by experience. So please forgive me if I say anything wrong, and if it's a bad talk. But anyway, even if it's a bad talk, it's just course and condition. Okay. No worries. Thank you. Okay. Have a good evening, afternoon, or morning. And it's lunchtime for the monks now. Okay, take care.